SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
From Savannah, Georgia. Yeah, first time ever. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, if you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website too, stevebick.com. And the magical mystery tour, it's lurching toward the finale. It's getting there slowly but surely. Charleston later today and then home on Sunday, finally, after a three-week odyssey. Three-hour tour. It's kind of like Gilligan's Island, and what an appropriate entree without thinking about it, because Jack Gilligan's going to be on. the dots just connected without any preconceived notion. Happy to be back. There she is. There's Savannah Barbie and Tina. It's her vacation. I had to do it. So we had three really fun, full days, although the weather only finally snapped to here yesterday. It had been just rainy and dreary day after day. Finally, a little breakthrough. And certainly those of you that have been out and about, and, it's a big vacation week all over the place. Has not been that great. Let's include Vegas in that with the snow. And then I saw that there was some snow in and around Arcadia and Pasadena. Did you see it? Yeah. So when we check in with Hammer and later with Tom Quigley too, and Barry Meadow as well, who's on the West Coast. Lots of West Coast visitors. And let's give you a quick lineup. I told you Jack Gilligan, I had to get Jack on. I was so tickled on Saturday to be there when Jack won his first graded stake. And for those of you that followed him and his development from bug to journeyman, it's really a nice story. And his dad, of course, Patrick, wrote a book that kind of hit the shelves late last year. Travels across Kentucky with the Bug, and it's an amazing story, the family story itself of the Gilligans and Patrick, who was a small time trainer in England and just decided that at a certain point, as Jack was moving toward his own career as a rider, to bring the whole family to the United States. And that's what they did. And Jack Gilligan making great progress and very likable and affable. And I think he's headed toward good things. And the win on Silver Dust on Saturday, a breakthrough for him. First graded stake win. So Jack Gilligan's going to join us. We'll check in with Jay Pridman, and we've got lots of recapping to do, and I want to get Jay's take. For those of you that haven't read his recaps of the three prominent Derby watch races going all the way back to Saturday with the Risen Star, and with also the very interesting performance that at a Golden Gate, another twist of fate, and we'll also get Hammer's thoughts too, because he kind of focused on the Blaine Wright runner, who is now going to get a return to dirt and going to get a chance, whether it's the San Felipe or whether they go someplace, not the San Felipe, which is right up on top of us, but someplace, Sunland, who knows. And speaking of Sunland, we'll also talk to Mary Rampolini, because you've got Sunland Derby and Sunland Oaks preview day on Sunday. And so we'll check in with Mary, and we'll get some postscript from the Oaklawn weekend. And also, it's kind of a quiet weekend after they had the Southwest on Saturday, on Monday. We'll talk about that in a second. But Jay Pridman also, Southwest recapping, and the El Camino Real and the Risen Star. And Jay, we'll see what Jay's thoughts are. And it's a, you know, it's a quiet weekend on the Derby watch front until things then really ratchet up next weekend. So we'll also look ahead to that and to just get a peek at the way the fields are coming together for, you know, Gotham and Fountain of Youth and more. Nick Tamaro, will check in with Nick after Mary joins us. Mary Rampolini and Ed DeRosa, too, had fun with Scully live on Friday leading into Risen Star Day, and see what Ed's thoughts were and what he's got. He's got a I know from seeing it on either on Facebook or somewhere or linked up on Twitter, he's got his goofy top 10 list, which you know, Ed goes out of his way weekly to make it controversial, so to get it might as well be called the clickbait top 10 as much as anything. It's a top 10 list without War of Will. Good luck to that list. Tom Quigley joins us as well. And then I mentioned Barry Meadow, and very pleased to get Barry on in advance, literally here days away from the official release of his new book. And Barry's kind of, I won't call him the J.D. Salinger of horse racing and handicap writing. But his book, which is more or less a pamphlet, maybe he was the Tom Paine of handicap writing. Money Secrets at the Racetrack, excuse me, is about as important a not just important as a money management, really, along with Steve Crist, exotic betting, the most important approach, written approach to bet structure and money management. And when Barry sent me a note that he was coming out with this new book, it really kind of fit into what we've been trying to do with Nick Tamaro, our conversations about trying to, you know, build better bets and leverage your opinion better. And Barry Meadow has been about that from the minute he basically graced the handicapping scene and the horse playing scene. And is as respected as anyone when it comes to what he has offered and the insights. Now, the new book, and it's voluminous, and it may not be as heavy going as Brohammer, and the pace, the very intricate pace tomes, but it requires going back and rereading the chapters as you read them, because it's very intense and there is just an outlandish amount of information. And what basically Barry did was peruse and analyze, and you know, we're going to get into the data discussion as well. He basically took charts from 160,000 races and it wanted to distill more or less what is to be gleaned and what in this era basically is there to tell us about, you know, all the different, you know, all the different elements that go into our decisions. And you know, it has the, yeah, the usual, quote unquote, the, you know, the typical elements that we look at, class, condition, and connections, and all of that, but it's a fresh look. And you know, Barry, if Barry was ready to put this, you know, down on paper and publish, then then it's going to be important, guaranteed. And we'll look forward to the end of the show, last half hour, and we'll talk about the skeptical handicapper. The skeptical handicapper, the main title, and then the subtitle, Using Data and Brains to Win at the Racetrack. And you couldn't have a better tutor on this. Barry Meadow joining us today. You know, a couple of notes here before we head to first break and we talk, reach out and connect with Jack Gilligan. Yeah, talked about or mentioned anyway the weekend and, you know, going back to Monday after we left you and fun recap morning. Certainly the Tom Amos conversation and everyone that responded to Tom, that was, you know, and concerns for his dad, and that was a moving and as always just informative. Tom Amos is really he's fun to talk to and smart and funny and interesting, always. So I know he appreciated everybody's kind thoughts. The way things turned out on Monday, for those of you that that dove in and wanted to try the New York Oaklawn pick five, if you got to Super Steed, obviously you did fine, and you did well. And one winner I know in the Oaklawn pick five, but the 60-1 was just silly. I mean, it good size field and all, but that was just ridiculous. That, I mean, I don't think much of him, and certainly didn't think much of him going in. And I don't think the race. We'll see how the race holds up, but. He made a nice move and beat that field going away. We'll see what it means, I think, down the road into the next, into the next round, as it were, with the Rebel and Arkansas Derby. And the other... the other two stakes, Cold Front ran a tremendous race. Just kept on finding more, really, under Johnny V to win the Razorback. And I imagine, it sets up well, heading toward the Racing Festival of the South. We'll talk to Mary about some of that follow-up. And she's a Julie who I've liked, just been a fan of. The nice Asmussen filly. Took the Bayakoa, moving toward the Azari. So, a nice day of racing on Monday at Oaklawn. Those were the big highlights. And you also had Bavaro, now with Linda Rice, win that Holly Hughes. That was part of the cross-country pick five, and the cross-country pick five again tomorrow with the last three at Oaklawn. I've got it here. I've got them here somewhere. And the seventh and eighth at Aqueduct. A few other performances to fold in. There's the Oaklawn. There we go. I tried to prune the piles of PPs from between Vegas. I had all the NHC stuff and craziness, and then last weekend and now this weekend. Back to Super Steed, and it wasn't the longest shot on the board. That was that Ninth Street that went off at 104-1, but variety of disappointments here. Jersey Agenda fell away. I mean, the pace was strong. It buried Gray Attempt, who was rank, and Sean Bridgemahan did all he could, but forget it. That Olympic Runner we talked about, I mean, for the maiden, that's what was, that was a little strange. For the maiden to be 13-1, and then Super Steed, who, I mean, the wet track race, the wet track race, stood out, and certainly the conclusion after two mediocre performances was that, a dry track's not for him, and so forth, or even the distance. But a $126 bonanza, there were certainly some pops. But Gray attempt, probably going to cut back now and so forth. Bankett was just Boldore, etc. Take a break here, just getting going. Weekend preview, lots to do. Jack Gilligan starts it off next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Tickets to the Belmont Stakes Racing Festival are on sale now. New York's premier three-day racing festival returns to historic Belmont Park June 6th through 8th. Buy tickets today and enjoy trackside reserve seats or enhance your experience with one of our premium hospitality packages to make this an unforgettable event. Grandstand admission starts at $15 and three-day festival passes are also available. Buy now at Ticketmaster.com or visit BelmontStakes.com. The Belmont Stakes, where champions are crowned.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Hi, John Parada here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest-growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at pabred.com.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Live after a little mid-February vacation, which first time I've ever done it, and we've had a wonderful time between New Orleans and then Mobile, Alabama, and now Savannah and Charleston later today and Saturday before heading home, and then we'll be on the stomp through a lot of different venues, including Tampa and then Santa Anita and Oaklawn before getting to Churchill Downs. And, you know, that kind of travel sounds a little bit like the itinerary that Jack Gilligan took as a bug and now is a journeyman. And in fact, his father recorded all the activity on the way to becoming a graded stake winning rider. And that happened Saturday. It was so fun to be there. Jack Gilligan joins us. Jack, congratulations again.
Thank you very much.
You know, it's one of those things that, in fact, I talked about it later with Brett Calhoun on Monday. You know, you'll remember your first win in this country, which is interesting in itself. It came for Jerry O'Dwyer himself, an expatriate.
Yeah.
And you know, then you get these kinds of wins, and you just it makes for, you know, a connection to owners and trainers, you know, for the rest of your career.
Oh yeah, I mean, it's great winning with connections. You know, Tom Durant and you know, Brett Calhoun, of course. It was just great, you know, to win for a big trainer and big owner like that, and you know, it made it more rewarding. You know, the horse got difficult to ride, and you know, just, you know, winning a huge race on a big stage like that on the big day of racing at fairgrounds is real special.
Well, and you know, you seem to be latching on to this when we talk about this horse. And you know, I know some people will say, "Oh well, Harlan Punch was in the process of you know, pulling you know, getting a soft tissue injury and so forth." But it sure feels like this is a horse that, even though he started 16 times, is still lacking the finishing touches and complete maturity. And you know, you had him bouncing around under you in the gate even before before they sprung the latch.
Yeah, he's one of his little tricks he likes to pull just before when they bring in the last horse. He seems to know when the last one's coming in, and that's when he decides to act up. He's actually a really smart horse. You know, it's nice to ride in the morning. He has to go with a pony because otherwise he's pretty unruly otherwise. But you know, like Brett said before in the interview, you know, Brett's been working on really hard for a long time now, and he's always believed this horse has had the talent, but he's never put it out there on the track. You know, he's just one of those tricky horses, and you know, Tappet's a card, you know, known for being a little bit quirky, and he's definitely falls into that category, you know. So I was just happy, you know, we were able to get out of him on Saturday. You know, he was able to put his best foot forward, and he ran really, really hard for us.
You could tell that going into the turn on the backstretch, he kind of brought you up. It seemed to the, you know, to the leaders, you were perched, getting an outside stalking trip, really ideal, and without really being asked, right? Coming to the off the turn to the head of the stretch, it seemed like he just kind of cruised up without much request.
Yeah, he was just feeling good. Like I said, I have to give credit to Brett, and you know, he's been working so hard on this horse, and I think he's finally got him sort of, you know, worked out now and got him in a good routine and got him, you know, where he's wanting to run a bit. You know, when I won the allowance race on him earlier in the meet back in December, I was like all out on him at the 3/8 pole, and he was kind of trying to suck back out of the race almost, you know, not really being willing. And I had to really get aggressive on him early, and he kind of come back onto the bridle then a bit, and we ended up winning that race. And then to the next race, he ran Robert Alvarado Road, and he ran a good race there, and he came second to Highland Punch that day, and ran a good solid race. And then I say last Saturday, you know, I think he improved a bit. I know, like I say, you know, Highland Punch getting the injury and stuff, but you know, there's still a good group of horses in that race, and he took care of them pretty nicely.
It's a stretch that really even a polished mature horse, it's a long stretch, and when you're out in front like that, you know, sometimes a horse like this can start looking around and you know, I'm out here alone.
Him, you know, if you end up all races over the years, the amount of times he's been at the head, been in the lead at the 16th pole and gets beat is crazy. He has a huge tendency to hang. But like I say, his last couple races he's run, he's been real honest. You know, he's really put it out there and tried hard. So, you know, I think Brett cut him last year, and you know, maybe he's starting to mature, like I say, and starting to kind of put it all together a bit now. Like I say, Brett always knew he had the talent. You know, Brett's always knew he had him. That's why he probably pursued him so hard and kept working hard with him. And like I say, he's finally starting to repair us a bit now, so that's good.
Well, for you to have this kind of a horse that could take you to some very high level events to get a good handicap horse like this.
Oh, for sure. You know,
that's great.
It's so important. You know, that's what I've been riding for a lot of good trainers now of his last sort of year and a half, and riding consistently for big trainers and stuff. But I've just never really had a big horse yet. You know, I've been winning races. And it's been great, but so I'm hoping now, he could help me sort of progress my career a little bit now. That's what every jockey needs, every jockey needs a big horse,
Absolutely, and we'll talk about your career and your development and coming to the U.S. too. Brett, I did take a couple of minutes with Brett on Monday, and he's very happy to ride you and likes what you bring to the combination of trainer intent and trainer instruction and reacting. I mean, the fact that he trusts you to ride a horse like this that needs some careful handling, that says a lot about you, and it's a great endorsement.
Yeah, it really is. I love working for that barn. It's a real good team and atmosphere there. And I put in my input. I work a lot of horses, for them, and I've worked Silver Dust quite a lot. Since last fall. Well, his last horse I ride in him, so it's rewarding. When you're working for a barn and they appreciate your feedback, and it's great. I really enjoy riding for those types of trainers.
Talk a little bit about the story. I mean, your dad recorded it for posterity, and the book that talks about the travels with Jack as the bug. Pretty entertaining, and
it's great,
right?
It's a really funny book. My dad's a really witty writer, and it's funny. He kind of kept it pretty quiet from me, anyways, for a while writing it. He's saying he was kind of working on something, and I didn't realize how much he kind of recorded, while we were doing the bug year. And that's it. There's a lot of good fun stories in there, and it's interesting. A lot of trainers that read it really think it's great, because they can sort of relate in some ways. They know all the places we talk about and the situations that we've been in and stuff. So it is a good book, and like I say, for people who don't even know too much about horse racing, it's a good way to kind of learn about what goes on behind the scenes as well.
The decision to bring the family over, I mean, talk a little bit about the backstory and, being a teenager and you're trying to break in the UK, and, then the opportunity to come with a complete support system, because so many riders, right?
Extremely lucky. So, I was born and raised in England. My dad trained since I was a baby, and my mum was always there. She was assistant trainer and stuff to a couple of other trainers in Newmarket as well growing up. So we were very, I was kind of bred into it almost. I had the perfect breeding to become a jockey. And especially being in Newmarket, which is, the real hub of horse racing in England, it was great. And I was very lucky, I always had, great support from people and got taught by the best. And, I started riding. I left school and I rode for a couple of months as amateur rider, just riding for my dad. And then I went full-time apprentice to a trainer called Sir Mark Prescott, who's one of the longest-serving trainers in England. He's been training since 1970. And he's very old school, and I learned a lot there. And, he's very regimental, very almost army-like, the way he's, everything is presented and everything. So it was a very good foundation for me. So I rode for 12 months in England, and in the back of my mind, I always kind of wanted to try America. My dad was an American citizen, so we kind of came over here on vacations. We got some family over here, so I always kind of liked America. And then while I was in the British Racing School training to become a jockey, me and my best friend Ben Rabelard, we did a student exchange between the American Racing School and the English Racing School. So we went over to Lexington, and we stayed with Chris McCarron for 1 week. And, he showed us a great time and took us around everywhere, and Keeneland, Churchill, and that kind of made me fall in love with it a little bit over here. And I kind of always kept that connection with Chris McCarron. So I rode for the year in England. Things went good, not great, but, things always kind of start off slow in England anyways as an apprentice. It usually takes a couple of years for you to get going over there. The bug system's done just on wins, isn't done on a timer. So I kind of did my year there, and I figured, well, you know, may I try winter in America and just see how it goes. So at the time as well, Dad's training business hadn't been going so well the last couple of years. You know, things started slowing down, and Mum wasn't really, you know, her job was fine, but we kind of had nothing holding us back, really. So we figured we'll just take a chance and go on a little adventure. And initially, you know, we just thought we'll try 6 months, and if we like it, we'll stay. And if not, we can come back. And, you know, we ended up loving it. I went to Lexington, met up with Chris McCarran. He got me sorted with a job galloping horses with Jimmy Corrigan. And then within a couple of weeks, I started riding races, and, you know, things went great. And then, obviously, I stayed that first winter in Turfway Park, and I did really good there with the bug. I was second leading rider with the bug there my first year. And, yeah, you know, always stayed around Kentucky. I liked it there. And, you know, just sort of worked my way up the ladder now. And, you know, now I'm riding for some of the best trainers in Kentucky. It's gone great.
And for the rest of the family, I mean, there is the suggestion that your dad should really be riding on a regular basis, too. I mean, for those that haven't had a chance to read any portion or the whole book.
He's definitely got undiscovered talent. You know, I don't think he ever believed in himself. He was that good of a writer. You know, my dad's very well read, and himself and his brother Sean Gilligan's very well read as well. So the families, you know, they've always been like that. And you know, he's just was doing it for fun, really, and he sent it around to a couple of people, and they really enjoyed it. And so that's why he took the chance and trying to, you know, get it going and turn it into something real. And he has, and it's worked out great. You know, everyone seems to love it that's read it. And, you know, I always thought it was great when I first read it, but I figured I was just being biased, you know. But yeah, no, it's been great, and I say we all settled down nicely here in America. My mum's got a great job. She's working for Windstar Farm as a farm foreman there. And I say Dad's working for Came at Peak at the moment. He's down in Payson Park and, you know, got a nice string of horses there, and it's exciting. You know, he's got a couple of horses there in his barn around the Derby Trail. So, yeah, it's all going well in America for the Gilligans.
Well, and, you know, you also, I mentioned the, you know, the first win that came for Jerry O'Dwyer. And although it was a little bit of a disappointing weekend for Jerry and neat supervision, but, you know, his story, you know, being able to come to the U.S. and really, you know, some unfair things that happened to him. And you know, he's gotten a chance, too, to get in the spotlight.
Yeah, you know. Jerry's a great horse, and he really is. I love riding for him too. You know, it's a shame he's got up to Maryland, but he's doing great up there now. But I always enjoyed riding for him when he was down in Kentucky. And I say, obviously, he gave me my first win on Lucian Queen. I remember it like it was yesterday. And you know, he's a great guy, and it's kind of funny. You know, we're both, you know, these last 12 months he's been doing really good, better than ever. And I say I'm really happy he's got a big horse in his barn now. And hopefully, you know, everyone, you know, horses have their off days and stuff, and I'm not sure what happened in that race, but hopefully that's a little bounce back for him, and, you know, keep helping him move up the ladder. He definitely deserves it.
Well, and, of course, you're setting an example as well for the riders coming up behind, because, you know, Declan Carroll, he needs all the direction he can get. He's a bit of a runoff.
Declan's great. I mean, you know, he's had a great foundation too, really. You know, his dad's David Carroll, obviously, used to train for years and is now assistant to Mark Cassie. So, you know, he's been good. And, you know, I like helping Declan out because he's tall like me. You know, it's kind of the tall jockeys, we've got to stick together, you know. So he's a good little rider, Declan. He'll be good. And, you know, everyone's like that when they begin. I was like that when I started off. Every jockey is, you know. We all make mistakes, and we all kind of not really sure where we're at sometimes, but we'll get the hang of it eventually. You know, it's just part of learning.
In terms of I bring up Deck because you guys are built very similarly. You know, you're kind of angular,
yeah,
and tall.
People mistaken us for each other on the backside all the time. They say, "Are you Deckson?" Or like, Deck will tell me, "Oh, someone thought I was you, Jack." You know, so yeah, no, we're both skinny and tall, and, you know, I was just the same as him. I say when I started out, I was very, very skinny. And,
what's the challenge on that front? I mean, because your dad's a big man. I mean,
my dad's like 5'11", and luckily, all my mum's side of the family is very short. So I'm kind of somewhere in the middle. My dad's side of the family is very tall. My mum's side of the family is very short. So I kind of ended up in the middle. But, yeah, you know, it is more of a challenge. You know, we got to be a lot lighter. You know, we have to be lighter than some of the other jockeys. And actually, you know, the small jockeys is easier for them because they're short. There's not as much body, you know. And then obviously in the actual race, we got to try and work harder and try to look lower and look smaller because we are got a bigger frame on us. You know, we stick out if we don't have to get down as low as some of the smaller jockeys, you know, because they're just naturally small. They look small on the horse. So it is definitely harder, I think, being a taller jockey. You know, we have to sacrifice our weight a little bit harder. And like I say, find that balance between strength and being light. You know, we can't go to the gym so much and get, you know, super strong like we'd like to, because obviously that's extra weight we have to carry. So it is a challenge, it definitely is. But, you know, I guess, you know, when I retire, I can be a normal size, I guess, then.
Well, there's, you know, right now between you and Trevor McCarthy, probably the, you know, just a little further ahead of you in terms of the development curve. And I've had this discussion with Tony Black, who was, you know, naturally light and small, and with Rich Migliori, who is more like you and Trevor and Declan. And there is a positive in having, you know, the long arms and the extension that you can get. I mean, you can, as opposed to the little pumpers like a George Chavez in the way, you know, that he rode, you know, getting all the way out on a neck, you get natural extension being
for sure.
Tall and long.
You know, I think it definitely does look, you know, if a tool jockey can get, knows how to get down right and knows how to be in rhythm, it is, you know, they look good. You know, tool jockeys do actually look really good when they can get down low. You know, Trent McCarthy, for example, you know, he gets down really low. It definitely is. I mean, in Europe, you know, I'm probably considered just an average size, really. In Europe, it's just, you know, the weight restrictions over here are a lot lower. You know, for some reason, America, the rest of the world, the weight's almost 10 pounds heavier, you know, is minimum weight. So it's just, you know, a lot of things in America, but the weights are unfortunately really, really low.
Who's holding your book, too? I forgot to ask
Liz
about.
Morris. Yeah, Liz Morris. So
nice.
She's got Adam Biskitz's book as well. I've had Liz for quite a few years now. I had Liz since the fall of 2016, I picked her up. She just had a couple of years off. She used to have Julia Felix's book up in Chicago, and she used to, I can't remember who she had down in Florida, but she used to have a jockey as well down in Tampa. And then she took a year off, and then when she got back into it, she contacted me. And at the time, I didn't have any agent, actually. It was the year after my bug, and, you know, things were, like it usually happens, you know, things kind of slowed down, and I actually just had my own book there for a little bit, and I had, you know, I just saw a couple of agents looking after me at the draw there. But when she picked me up, you know, things went great, and I was at Turf out a year. And then the following year, I had one of my best seasons yet, riding in Kentucky. I was 13 rider at this park. And then that following winter, last winter, we came down to Fairgrounds, and that's when she picked up Adam's book, which was last winter. And she's had us both ever since.
Well, she's got you in so many good barns, and you just look at the past week, even at Fairgrounds, you know, winner for Chris Hartman, just missed for Buff on Aloha Betty last week. Obviously the win for Brett Calhoun, you're riding Phil Bauer and Moquette, and the win for Michelle. We spent plenty of time with Michelle Lovell, and then Sunday she wins with Just Might, the maiden.
Yeah, that was a good win as well, that one. So he's a cool little horse. That's good. It's always great to win for Michelle. She's another barn, you know, I love riding for. So, yeah, no, I'm lucky I get to ride for a lot of great trainers.
Yeah, John Ortiz winner yesterday in a claiming race, and then coming up a very busy day today, actually. You got seven that you're named on today, and then four on Saturday, a couple on Sunday. So all kinds of good things, Jack, and just going to be easy to remember I thought some great pictures of you and the smile. I just put it up actually earlier. The smile on your face after that win and then talking to Brian Spencer and you know, all the attention. I couldn't be happier for you and want you to stay safe and continue to have nothing but good things.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Not at all. Jack Gilligan, everybody. And you can follow Jack on Twitter, JackGilligan14, JackGilligan14. And I mentioned Buff. How about yesterday, Buff Bradley joining Twitter? And so jump on Buff while you're following people. Buff Bradley 1 as well. Let's take a break here. 20 minutes to the top of the hour. Jay Privman going to swing in, and we'll get Jay's recapping from the Derby Watch and see what movement there was on the top 20 list that he and Mike Watchmaker, they're in the early stages of the Derby Watch trail. Later, Mary Rampolini. Sunland coming up, the Sunland Derby and Oaks preview. You got what? The Mind? You got the Island Fashion, the Currabot, and the Mind That Bird. So we'll talk to Mary as well. Nick Tamaro, Ed DeRosa, Hammer, Quigley, and Barry Meadow on his new book. Back after this with Jay.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up with ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest-growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at pabred.com.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
The faces all around me, they don't smile, they just crack. Waiting for our ship to come, but our ship's not. Sins. We sit and grow our roots into the floor.
back at the races. 15 to the top of the hour, and give me something to believe. Absolutely a perfect lead in to Jay Privman's Derby Watch visit. Jay, good morning.
Hey, Steve. How are you?
Excellent. I'm on the stomp, shifting tack to Charleston later. And I know you, we talked before both of your trips, the one that didn't happen and the one that did.
Yes, and it was really a fun time down there, so hope you have a good time.
I'm looking forward to getting. I hadn't been here in 30 years. So it's new to me, and certainly new to Tina. Jay, reason to believe. We had three prep races, all very intriguing for different reasons. And for those that haven't had a chance to read the great expanded notes that you do, recapping the Derby Watch races, give us your rundown on the Risen Star and the El Camino and the Southwest.
All right, well, we'll start with the Risen Star, which I think was probably regarded as the best of the three in terms of not only who won, but Derby possibilities, and that was War of Will, who's now 3-for-3 on dirt. He got a 92 buyer speed figure, which is probably a little lower than you'd want to see if you're really nitpicky, but one thing I really like about this horse is that he makes good trips. He has good tactical speed. He puts himself in position, and then he'll wait for Gaslione to ask him to advance later in the race, and he responds. He's done it in both of his last couple of starts, the two stakes wins, this and then prior in the LeCompte. I think he's a really solid horse. He should be the favorite for the Louisiana Derby, and I liked this race a lot. The runner-up Country House, I thought, ran well, but obviously his inexperience betrayed him. He didn't break well, and he was lugging in pretty badly, so he needs to be corrected a couple of times through the lane, but he certainly looks like he's got some promise. And then Royland ran on well for third. He just kind of needs to figure out, in his last couple races, he just really dropped way out the back, and the way the Derby is now, the Kentucky Derby, without the stretch-out sprinters and the way the point system is set up, where the most recent races are the most important races in terms of earning points, the pace isn't as, you don't get those 45 and change paces that you did years ago. And I really think, generally speaking, you need tactical speed. You don't want to fall out the back. So that's a horse I think needs to, he's got the last part of the race down, Pat. He needs to get the first part of the race down. Down a little bit better. So that would be my take on the Risen Star.
One note, and it came up with, obviously, with Mark Cassie, and actually not just with Cassie, but with Amos doing the recaps on Monday. And, you know, all you have to do is look at that chart, Jay, and see that, you know, the horses that were second, third, and fourth, and fifth, down to Hot Creek Hustle and Limonite, they were all 11th, 12th, 13th, and 14th. The only horse on or near the pace that survived it was War of Will, and for that,
right,
certainly for that reason, I don't care. I'm not as bothered by the middling figure as some people seem to be.
Yeah, no, I liked his race a lot. He's a gorgeous horse. I love the way he moves. There's just a lot to like about that horse.
You know, you bring up the way he looks, and obviously it's February, and these three-year-olds, they change on a weekly basis, and maybe there's some that'll be catching up to him physically by the time we get to April and into May. Maybe he's just a little ahead physically right now, but he is just a stunning specimen. Let's talk about the mystery horse a little. And Blaine Wright, very fun story here, developing Peter Redekop and another twist of fate. And if he translates it to dirt, Jay, this is an interesting player.
Well, I mean, and that's the $64 question with him, is will he transfer it to dirt? Because his synthetic races have been off the charts good. He's won in a romp in all of them. And, if the Kentucky Derby was run on synthetic, he'd be favored right now, but it's not. His one dirt race was very poor, but it was his first start, and it was sprinting, and that's just not what he wants to do. So he's going to get his, Brad Free reported yesterday, he had talked to Blaine Wright, that he's going to make his next start on dirt. he wasn't even nominated to the Jeff Ruby at Turfway, which, if you were going to stay on synthetic, would have been the obvious next spot for him. So that's where so he's going to make a dirt start next. So we'll see if it's in Southern California or if he ships, and you know, maybe, who knows? Maybe he'll go to the Louisiana Derby and take on War of Will. Otherwise, he's going to have to. Otherwise, he would just come to Southern California and run. There's obviously, with a horse like that, a lot of different options. He can go anywhere. Go to Florida. He could go to the Wood Memorial. But they're going to give him the one shot, and if he runs well, he'll move on to the Derby. And if he doesn't, they could go back to synthetic. They could go to the Preakness, because one thing about the El Camino Real Derby, it's a win and you're in for the Preakness. That's one of the little twists of that race, being a Stronach race, to try and attract runners to it. And they ended up getting a big field. And the winner, who turned out to be a Twist of Fate, gets a fees paid berth into the Preakness Stakes. So that's a little bit of a perk for that race. But I don't think, you know, it's hard to make, to get real, to really know what these races mean, because until the horses like another Twist of Fate or those who ran behind them, until they reproduce that kind of form on the main track, you have to be slightly circumspect, I think.
I won't disagree. It is intriguing, and we'll see where it goes. It'd be kind of neat to have Blaine Wright go down this trail.
Absolutely. I mean, it's nice to see new faces every year instead of the same old, same old.
And also for Mr. Redekop, too, who's been around for a good long while, has had a lot of good horses, and, you know, is regionally northwestern or, you know, western Canada and you know, the northwestern region, and he, you know, makes his way down into California plenty. It's a great, I think it's a, one of the neater stories that's emerged here since the start of the year. Another Twist of Fate, and Scat Daddy in his waning days as a stallion, of course, and with his progeny. Let's get to Monday and the crazy price on the Super Saver Colt for Larry Jones, and sweeps around them on the turn and wins at 60-1 Super Steed.
Right. Yeah, he had finished. He beat one horse in his previous race, the Smarty Jones. He finished 7th out of 8. He had a little bit of trouble in the race, but I didn't think it was enough to account for how poorly he ran, but he certainly bounced back, and as you mentioned, he made that big 5-wide move on the turn and won. But this race only got an allowance class figure of 87, and I wasn't impressed with the Smarty Jones, and this race didn't do much for me either. I just think these are very average horses that are based at the moment at Oaklawn, and I think you're going to see a lot of opportunistic horses and trainers looking to ship in for the Rebel in the Arkansas Derby, because if what you've got to do is beat horses who are running in the 80s, you need to go there. That program is sensational. The amount of money, the races, the spacing of those races, that's just a great three-year-old program at Oaklawn, and you've still got two more races down there that are both million-dollar purses, the Rebel and the Arkansas Derby, and the Rebel obviously being 50 points for the winner and the Arkansas Derby 100, and I think you're going to see the quality ramped up exponentially for those two races compared to what we've seen for the first two preps down there.
Well, and especially knowing that Baffert and even potentially Hollendorfer and others, Todd Pletcher sent in the horse the other day. So that was for a maiden event. So there's plenty, and he, of course, Danza with a Arkansas Derby win. I mean, they'll come from all corners for their,
well, and even Super Saver prepped. They didn't win it, but he prepped there before he went to win the Kentucky Derby, the sire of Super Steed.
Well, in addition, and I was remiss, Jay, beyond what went on in these three stakes, I was being unfair to Galilean and the Cal Cup win.
Right. He's been brought along real sensibly. Four straight races against state breds. He won the Cal Cup Derby on Monday, and he's one of the two newcomers to the Derby Watch Top 20 this week. The other horse we put in was Country House, and we threw two others overboard, either because they're off the trail or didn't run well. And, you know, I like this horse. I think he's a nice horse. He's got to get faster. When he runs against open company, he got an 84 fire figure. But I think that, you know, he's kind of, as we like to joke, he's a fake cowbred. I mean, he's not a fake cowbred, but he's, because the mare dropped the foal in California and was bred back to a California stallion, so you're a cowbred. But I mean, he's my Uncle Mo, so he's he's got, he was a $600,000 two-year-old buy. So he's, you know, he's a cow, they took advantage of the opportunity to run him against cowbreds, but he certainly is an open company bred and I think class kind of horse, and now we'll see what they want to do with him. They've got plenty of options. San Felipe would be the local option, but that race is coming up pretty salty, so I think you'd want to avoid that. And then the races that would make sense, I think, after that would be, you could either go to the Louisiana Derby or the Rebel, or even the Sunland Derby, which is an $800,000 race and 50 points to the winner. And even if you run there, you still have time to come back in something like the Bluegrass, if you wanted, or even the Arkansas Derby, if you wanted to get a more likely the Arkansas Derby, I should say. But if you want to get two starts, then you've got a couple of opportunities for a horse like that. I meant the Lexington. I was trying to think what are the races that are closer to the Derby. So I think they want to run that horse twice more. And so that's the timing of what, how to do that comes into play, especially if you don't go in the San Felipe. And, you know, Pollendorfer's already got Instagram for the San Felipe. And the owners of Galloway and West Point, they've got Gunmetal Gray, so they just need to figure out how to split, I think, all those horses up and find the best spots for them. And I would think a horse like Gunmetal Gray, for instance, would be perfect to go to Louisiana with the long stretch there. He's just a long stretch running colt, and I just think that would be kind of the appropriate place for him. And then maybe a slot Galloway and into the Sunland Derby, and Instagram stays home. That's just an educated guess as to what might happen.
Well, and stay on this theme, Jay, and kind of touch on some of the movement in the Derby Watch as we, you know, start to look forward to upcoming events, including what looks to be a really important running of the Fountain of Youth. I mean, it's always a major stop toward the Florida Derby, but you know, there's going to be some heartbreak after this Fountain next week.
Right. So in terms of, like I was saying, for the additions this week, we put on Country House and Galloway, and Network Effect is off the Derby trail, so he came off the list, and so did Owendale, who was, for me, the disappointment in the Risen Star. I thought he was the second best horse going into the race behind War of Will, and he just didn't run well at all, so we took him off the list. So those were the two that came out. As you mentioned, there's nothing really going on this weekend. It's really kind of an odd weekend. Usually you get something every weekend towards the Kentucky Derby at this time of year, but there's no stakes, no prep races, nothing really of consequence. So as you said, the next big race, and it's big, is the Fountain of Youth, where you've got right now Hidden Scroll looking to come back off that incredible maiden win that we saw on Pegasus undercard for Bill Mott. You've got Maximus Mischief potentially running there and looking to bounce back from his poor third place finish in the Holy Bull. Looks like Vekoma is going to make his first start of the year in the Fountain of Youth for George Weaver. Code of Honor scheduled to run in that race, and he's looking to bounce back after disappointing in the Mucho Macho Man for Chug McGahee. And then it looks like Signal Man will make his first start of the year for Kenny McPeak in that race. At the moment, that's the plan for him to go there, and Harvey Wallbanger to wait for the Florida Derby. So, Bourbon War for Mark Hennig, who I thought was a really nice allowance winner last month at Gulfstream. He's scheduled to go in the Fountain of Youth. In fact, I just saw a tweet from Mike Welsh that he had his final breeze this morning down there at Gulfstream. So, I mean, just all those names, it's really, a, as you said, it's a terrific race, and I'm looking forward to being there for it.
Let me ask you, too, about the two most notable allowance slash maiden winners, and I brought up the Monday maiden mile performance. Intrepid Heart, this a Tappet, Johnny for Todd Pletcher, and then there's the emergent performance that Maximum Security turned in, a New Year's Day, a second tier homebred for Gary and Mary West, and a couple of nice 80s in the first two starts, and then this explosive 7 furlong win, and 102 Fig, and Jason Services and Gary West said Florida Derby.
Right. So I mean, he won going 7/8. He got a big Fig. We'll see what happens when he runs another quarter mile farther against really good horses. The Intrepid Heart race was really good. He just crushed those horses in Oakland. Todd had a bunch of horses running in stakes races there, so he just shipped some other horses in to run. Why wouldn't you send maidens over to Oakland to run when the purses are $93,000? and the Lowe's run a lot at Oakland. I mean, that's a track they've supported quite strongly over the years, so that horse, I think, just made sense to, since he was ready to run, it was like, well, why not? Then he went over there. We'll see if he gets fast-tracked like Justify did, or if they're patient with him, but boy, that horse, he was very visually impressive, and he's certainly got the pedigree by Tappet out of a Touch Gold mare. He was a late foal. He wasn't born until May 10th, so he wouldn't even be three calendar years old by Kentucky Derby day. So I think that's something to just consider before you get a little too ahead of people get too ahead of themselves on rushing off and wanting to see him go to the Derby. I think there's probably a reason he didn't make his debut till Feb 18, and he's still almost 3 months away from his actual third birthday, and he's by Tappet, and we know that they can get overcooked if you go too hard, too fast with them. So I think there's a lot of reasons for this horse to be considered one to watch, but maybe not one to watch by the first Saturday in May.
You could technically fill a coliseum with those kinds of horses that I'll be here all week. And in fact, while we're on this topic too, the horse of Asmussen, an hour later, hour and a half later, that Comedian ran a nice race, also a mile maiden breaker, 79 buyer. That wasn't terrible.
You missed it. All right. It went right over your head, Mr. Punny. No joke. You just completely missed it.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
really, really worried about you. Yeah, I mean, no, I liked his race, and Jeff Bloom had a couple of nice winners there. That horse and Snapper Sinclair won there last week, so they had that was a nice weekend for Bloom Racing, which has really branched out and has runners based in a lot of locales right now, and I thought that horse's race was very good. I would think he'd get a chance to run in a decent stake race. If they think the horse is good enough, they're not shy about giving him a shot. So I'll be interested in seeing what the next move is with him. Obviously, he's got allowance conditions, having just won a maiden race. But certainly, if the Rebel comes up, if nobody really. If we're wrong somehow about the Rebel and it comes up like the Southwest or the Smarty Jones, I mean, I wouldn't be bashful about running that horse in a race like that, because he's got figs right now that would fit against what we've seen down there. Getting back to Maximum Security, just so we can just sort of let that. I mean, his races are sprinting. He's been running in starter optional claiming races. I mean, I know it was a freakish performance, but in the context of who it was against and all that, it's just a different class of horses from what he'd be running against at a far longer distance. So I know the Fig was dynamic, but I'm going to be a little circumspect about Mr. Maximum Security right now.
Well, and you know, you can understand what the potential is when it comes to New Year's Day, and you know, part of the the program that Gary West and John Secura have at Hill and Dale, and any potential stake performer that can get black type is a feather in New Year's Day's cap as a as a stallion, and kind of starting out he was the stallion that kind of left on the side of the road after he got hurt, after his 2-year-old year. And I think he was kind of lost in the shuffle his first year at stud. So it's a chance to showcase potentially for New Year's Day. And I think that's a big part of, the idea of getting him a stakes opportunity. Jay, one thing I should slip in, I know we won't worry about the handicap division and the Breeders' Cup Classic type stuff until, way down the road, but it was a little bit of another weekend with some emergent, or at least some showcases between Silver Dust's effort that I was treated to at Fairgrounds. We just talked to Jack Gilligan, and Cole Front as well, and Copper Bullet in a thriller in the Razorback. I thought the pieces are slowly coming into place for the bereft handicap division.
Yeah, I mean they were decent races, so
yeah,
we'll see how they stack
it's early,
up when
early in the year
down the line. Yeah, I'm maybe not as geeked up about that division as you are.
Well, let's Jay, other topics, everything else. Copacetic, anything we should be aware of going into the weekend?
No, Steve. I'm just going to go now and get my work done for the Sunday form.
For the Daily Racing Form. America's Turf Authority since?
Yeah. You were born.
days ahead of you. Back after this break, top of the hour. We'll thank Jay Pridman as always. Derby watch, and there won't unless there's something weird that happens. There shouldn't be any movement for next week. But boy, a big weekend next week when we talk to Jay going into the Fountain of Youth and more. Let's go into hour two. Mary Rampolini's going to join us. Want to get a quick hit in from Mary about anything that went on at Oaklawn, as well as what is happening Sunday at Sunland as they get ready toward the Sunland Derby and Oaks. They've got the preview day on Sunday. Be aware of that. A couple of little stakes, too, at Sam Houston as their season continues. I should get a little zip in, a little plug in for Fonner Park, too. I don't want Fonner to get lost in the shuffle. I was not good. I missed Rieto's opening, but Fonner. Park, FYI, keep tabs. Back after this, Mary Rampolini, Nick Tamaro, Hammer, Ed DeRosa yet. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Enjoy Daily Racing Form's best value with a multi-track PP pack. Get 5 full-card PPs featuring the day's best racing for only $6. Each DRF multi-track PP pack features full-card DRF pass performances for the top tracks you want to play. Handicapping articles and analysis, closer looks for key tracks, and selections by DRF handicappers. Daily packs and longer plans for all budgets are available. Download full-card PPs for 5 of today's top tracks. Visit drf.com/multi-track today.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Your barn is successful. Your program is tried and true. However, there are a few horses that aren't responding in the way you'd like. Does this sound familiar? Well, let Biomedical Research Labs help change that. Our clinically proven products will help your equine athletes become their very best. I guarantee it. This is Joseph Vellante. To learn more, contact me at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.